Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. The Early Morning Late Show. Get your day started.
Good morning. Happy Monday. It is August 28th. Cannot believe that August is almost over. And we're coming up already on Labor Day weekend. It's going to be a great time to celebrate and to get back into our fall routines. But for now, let's milk summer for all it's worth. You know, I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you had a chance to get some projects done that maybe you were working on, or maybe you got a nap on Saturday, and that's what you needed more than anything. Anyway, I hope you got what you needed. You know, we often don't want to do what we're designed to do. We don't want to get exercise or maybe eat better or try to get to bed earlier or meditate and memorize scripture. Sometimes we just don't want to do what we were designed to do. So, but God always sees the bigger picture. And I want to be a person that can make right decisions, but I want to be even more a person who knows how to make them. And that's why I need his wisdom. And that's why I always race to God's word. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 8 this morning, it says, "For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life." So it also says in Proverbs 18:10, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe." I love the idea of having a safe place to go to be with God and to be in safety and in under his sovereignty. I just love it. All right, we have a great show today. We've got my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese, coming up. He is not an optimist, but he hopes one day he will be. So we'll chat with him. We'll take a very short break. It's just 6 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning, and be right back with Patrick Albanese.
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
All right, you know that theme song belongs to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning from prestigious West Des Moines.
Prestigious. Yeah, you just got done doing your carpool duties, I would imagine, getting the kiddies off to school.
Coming up. In a little bit, yeah. I mean, my first week is under my belt, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. You're in the routine. Yeah,
and, you know, it's you have that love-hate relationship with I love having the time, but then I feel guilty for does this mean I don't want to be around my kids? Yeah, the whole thing's a mess. And then we have this what we call the school drop-off lane. And really, people that think that we should all just get along have never dropped their kids off at school. Because, you know, I think I saw a guy with a coexist bumper sticker having a fist fight with the give peace a chance bumper sticker guy. There's something happens to parents. And then, of course, I even find my own evil parts of my own brain saying, you know something, I feel sorry for your kids, because if they're going to turn out anything like you, unable to navigate the drop-off lane at a grade school, they're not going to do well in this world.
Right. And
it's a terrible thing. But anyway, you get used to the whole drop-off experience. In fact, my wife, and this is a confession, so I'm going to tread gently here, but she gave me these stickers because it was so frustrating when people would park their car in the kiddie drop-off lane and then walk their kids in, and so no other cars could pass, and you're stuck there for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So she gave me a bunch of Post-it notes that say, "We've seen what you've done, and we will tow your vehicle the next time." And because the school wasn't taking care of the problem, I would just, for the first week of school, go out and slap these all over the cars that parked and blocked the drop-off lanes. And I solved the problem myself. I'm a dupe.
I love it.
Yeah. You know, I don't have high expectations.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, I would like to have enough money to be able to give a decent tip to my live-in barber.
Right. All right. So now that it's back to school and that people are going to start reading books again, what about Hillary's book? Is anyone going to read that?
Well, no, but they can put it with the other books of hers that they didn't read.
That's right.
You know, Living History or what was it? I don't even know.
I don't know.
And wasn't it funny? You know, they release an excerpt of the book that she was creeped out when Donald Trump was hovering behind her. I don't know if you remember, Al Gore did that to George Bush, and Bush just laughed it off, and they thought he was stupid or something like that. But he ended up winning the election. She says she got creeped out, but I'm very powerful, and I'm not intimidated easily, except that creeped me out. Aren't you married to kind of a creep? I'm just kind of throwing that out there. Isn't it? Don't you sometimes wonder, you say, are you guys oblivious to this blind spot that you have? I mean, this must be a humongous blind spot. We say, you know what? I'm going to put this in the book about how this guy who people think is a sexual predator creeped me out. When you're married to one of the biggest sexual predators on the planet, and you, not only does it make the book, but they say, what should we release? You know, kind of as a teaser for people to get them to want to read this book. Let's release the thing that makes us look the worst.
Oh, boy. Plus, I look at the tactic that even if he used it as a tactic, he did it on live television, and it kind of seemed to have worked. It's like almost blaming Boris Spassky for looking at you funny, and then after three more moves, it was checkmate. Well, that wasn't fair, not the way he looked at me.
No, and you know, we don't have to go too far back in history. Just the previous presidential election, when Harry Reid lied on the Senate floor about Mitt Romney's taxes. And said, you know, hey, I heard it from somebody that the guy doesn't pay his taxes. And, you know, the ever, you know, vigilant media digging into it said, do you have anything to back that up? And he says, nope. And they're like, that's good enough for us. Okay, Mitt Romney didn't pay his taxes. Years later, when he's asked about it, his only response to is, well, it worked, right? In other words, yes, I lied, but it worked. And I laugh now because I realize that a realization came upon me, which is rare, as you know. If you know me, this is unusual. You know, it's like Peter walking on the water. You know, he's like, he got a couple of steps, said, wait a second. This isn't right. But at least he got to walk a couple of steps. And I bet he held that over the other apostles for quite some time. Yeah, well,
no doubt.
Whatever you say, I'm the guy that walked a couple of steps on water. Okay?
Right, right. Well, let's talk about the double standard idea that seems to be prevalent on the left.
That's what I was getting at. I used to think, golly, don't they care about this double standard? And I realized not only do they not care about it, they celebrate it. Think of how much fun it is to be able to have the double standards and flash it in front of your opponent's face and say, of course I don't have to live up to any standards that I set for you. Of course I don't, because I'm better than you. It bugged me for years. I thought, my gosh, what's with the double standard thing? And I'm thinking, oh, maybe they don't know. And then I realized they know. They don't care. Because part of evil, I mean, think about, you know, Satan in the Garden of Eden. He very quietly went up to Eve and tempted her. What did he say? She could get a bite of this apple. He just said, I'm kind of curious. How do the rules work again? Huh, that's odd. That's interesting. Planted seeds of doubt. And then before long, he's got her propagating the same lie to somebody else. And that's what they like to do to us. We'll have the double standards. And then we're going to make you accept things that we know that are scientifically not even provable. In fact, they will be out and out lies that there's absolutely no difference between the genders. And even though they know that that's not true, they want you to parrot that exact belief. Now, you may not buy it, but they don't care if you believe it or not, because they got you to acquiesce. They said, see, we made you're playing on our field now. You're spouting it. I mean, think of how we watch our language all the time. We always have to make apologies. We're crazy about statues. We're going, well, gosh, you know, I'm not saying I'm defending Robert E. Lee, but gee, we always have to put that little caveat in there, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
They're controlling our language.
Yeah. And not only, you know, Robert E. Lee, but Robert E. Lee's horse, which we'll talk about when we come back. I'm take a short break. We're talking to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. I'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with us this morning. It is Monday, August 28th, and we are looking at a great day ahead of us. And as we're talking about the way in which the left or people get us to talk about stuff, now we're talking about Robert E. Lee right before we went to break. And we also were talking about his horse Traveler, which is the USC's mascot, which is now coming under scrutiny for having a similar name to Robert E. Lee's horse.
And was that a white horse?
It's a white horse.
Yes. another level of craziness to it. But, you know, if you ever wondered how crazy it could get, don't think you can fully grasp how weird it's going to get. That's weird.
Yeah, it's just going to get weirder too, isn't it?
But, you know, it isn't about they don't care. I don't think anybody really cares. I don't think anybody sits there and watches a USC game and says, that horse is named Traveler. Now, up until this story came out, were you aware that Robert E. Lee's horse was named Traveler?
Not for a second.
I mean, there are two horses that you and I may know. Mr. Ed.
Yeah.
And Trigger.
I only know Mr. Ed.
You don't even know Mr. Ed. So Roy Rogers. Wasn't that Roy Rogers?
His yeah, that's right. It's Trigger. Yeah.
Trigger. Yeah.
But Mr. Ed, come on. That's
trigger.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that's come with a trigger warning.
Right.
Roy Rogers' horse. So now I am fully well aware that Robert Lee's horse was named Traveler. And evidently there are some people, everybody's so dialed in that they see a horse on a field and they go, that horse's name is Traveler. That reminds me of Robert E. Lee. Wait a second. This has got to stop. They don't care because the issue isn't the issue. The issue is how far can we push people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much can we make them do?
Yeah. Now, Patrick, when we look at the media and the way they operate, there is an interesting story, and I think you brought this to my attention, about a former Marine, Everett Glenn Miller, and he shot some police officers in Florida.
Yep.
Tell us a little more about that story.
Well, you know, it's interesting that just a few short days ago, we had a couple of different cities. It was in Florida, and I think there was another one in Philadelphia. There were a couple of cop shootings. And they've caught the guy that fired on the cops in Florida. I think he killed two. And all they could talk about, you know, he's a former Marine. Former Marine, you know, maybe it's PTSD, it's something. But he's a former Marine, darn it. Darn it, darn it, darn it. And it's all sad. And if it was PTSD, you'd worry about it. What they seem to have neglected to tell everybody is that his name was not Everett Glenn. What his name was is he had changed his name and actually had posted about it on Facebook to Malik Muhammad Ali. Now,
yeah.
I'm not saying
changes
that,
the narrative a little bit, doesn't it?
It changes the narrative, and I'm not saying that this was Islamic terrorism, but I think to myself, why would you leave that out? I remember when the news used to report the news and they'd say, well, here's all the information that we have, and but now they're saying, gosh, if we put this in there, people might think that it's Islamic terrorism. We don't want them to think that. So let's just not report everything. Well, who gets to make that decision? Do I get to make those decisions? I find it, you know, I don't want to say ironic. I find it interesting that the media gets all upset about being called fake news. And you say, well, why are you withholding information? You know, you don't want to report on the actual Antifa. I guess that's the – how do you pronounce it? Antifa? Antifa?
I don't know. Antifa, I think. I think it's Antifa. I don't know what it is.
But you don't want to report that they actually do commit some levels of violence, and then you get upset when people say, well, what about those guys? No. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain, ergo my intro music.
Mm-hmm.
Everything comes back to the Wizard of Oz.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Okay, a couple of minutes left. I think it's interesting that Congress is upset that the president is threatening a shutdown. Comment on that.
Well, I think it's kind of funny that we have a do-nothing Congress that is upset about a government shutdown because that means they won't be able to get anything done. You guys aren't getting anything done anyway. Maybe you should just go home. I would love it if we could just withhold their paychecks. Now, it won't make much of a dent in the national debt, but it would be symbolic.
Yes.
Who knows how all of this will eventually play out, but they're upset because they're going to get blamed for it. It's like, well, you should get blamed for it. It's actually going to be your fault.
Yeah.
But we don't want to get blamed for it. It's your fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we don't want the blame. There's nobody to put the blame on. We need somebody to put the blame on. Who can we get? Oh, it's silly.
Well, Patrick, I have to admit that I think there's something in your voice. Maybe it was your vacation. Didn't you recently just take a vacation?
Yeah, we spent a week on Sanibel Island.
Nice.
Oh, my gosh. Talk about refreshing. I had gone many years without this vacation thing, and I got to tell you, when was the last time you took a vacation?
Oh, it's been a long, long time. Long time.
How long?
An actual vacation? Probably 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Was that thing, was it longer for more than a couple of days?
That was about 10 days. 10 days, 10 years ago.
Yeah. You need another vacation. I got to tell you, you come back with a spring in your step. I mean, you should go.
Yeah, but
I don't even know where. Just, you're probably worried somebody's got to cover your show. So what?
Well, I just can't. I just can't leave a show right now. I mean, I just got here.
Well, hang on a second. Are you not? I mean, alphabetically, aren't you one of the top guys there?
I am alphabetically top. Alphabetically,
yeah, because you spell your last name with three A's, which three. I think was
Arnold. Yeah,
Arnold. Well, you could just leave.
I can't just leave. You know what? I kind of like that idea, though. Maybe I should just take a break. Maybe I should just go now.
I know you well. If you don't do it now, if you don't do it right now, you won't do it. You should do it right now.
All right. Well, it sounds like almost like a little bit of a dare, to be honest.
I'm throwing down the gauntlet.
All right.
Do it.
I'm Patrick. I am going to do it. I'm going to take a vacation, a break, starting right now. There. I said it.
A week.
I'm going to take a week off. So I'm going to take a break starting right now. That wraps up our time together, Patrick. Hopefully I'll see you or talk to you again in a week or so. But to my listeners, all right. I'm taking Patrick up on his dare. I'm taking off. I'll see you in a week.
Gotta go.
Gotta go. We'll take a short break and be back, and I'll see you in a week.
Well, good morning. It is 28 past the hour, and this is the Early Morning Late Show. And as you heard Bill Arnold just say, he is one of our top staff alphabetically and took up the dare from Patrick and decided that vacation starts today.
To be honest, I've never seen him move that fast.
So Bill is out of the building and we'll be filling in somehow for a week. So we went toward the bottom of the list alphabetically. I'm Neil Stavem. And go to sit in today for Bill.
And we're excited to I am excited to have
you
because
thank
I don't
you.
Like dead air. So I'm very, very glad to see your face right now.
It does make a difference to just leave partway through a show, which is, you know. We do hope Bill comes back and wish him a good week away. Hope that you've had a good weekend. And, of course, a lot of our attention has been focused on the southern United States in Houston and, of course, Corpus Christi and the entire area there. My, what a... What an amazing mess that they're dealing with. Houston remains a city under siege, as the mayor says. The Bayou City is facing what the National Hurricane Center calls catastrophic and life-threatening flooding as what was once Hurricane Harvey continues to hover over the region. That's the part that's a little hard. I think, you know, we across the upper Midwest and really most of the country, you get a storm and it's blows through in a day or two, mm-hmm. and then you can start to clean up or recover. But that's not the case here. They've had 25 to 30 inches of rain since Harvey hit last Friday, and more rain expected this week.
And that's just going to make everything more difficult. It will continue to prolong the flooding, which is really one of the most dangerous parts after the worst of the storm passes over. And that is going to contribute a great deal to the devastation because they won't be able to get in clean up.
Well, the National Weather Service says the city typically sees 49 inches of rain every year, but the region has seen over 46 inches of rain since the start of June. So they're like way above normal, and then getting another 25 to 30, and obviously a problem. People are urged over the weekend to seek refuge on the roofs of their homes as water rapidly rose in scores. Rescues have been carried out. Texas Governor Greg Abbott has approved the mobilization of 4,000 National Guard troops to help with the crisis. We'll hear a little bit more from that in about 10 minutes or so. Also coming up in the second half of the first hour, the early morning late show, Adam Carrington, who's professor of political science at Hillsdale College, one of our regular guests, will join us. We're going to talk football, among other things, and the problems if you pray at a football game. So we'll get to that and more. All coming up. It's the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for the suddenly vacationing Bill Arnold. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Early Morning Late Show. I am not Bill Arnold. Bill Arnold decided to take a little vacation. And it's an honor to sit in for him. I'm Neil Stavem. You can just think of me as Counterfeit Bill, something like that, today.
I'm sure he'd appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate the fact that my home is on the higher ground and dry and not flooded. Wow, what a mess it is in Houston. We've got a little... update on what's been happening there. Of course, you're well aware of it. Flooding in Houston shows no signs of letting up as the remains of Hurricane Harvey continue to drop water in the region, measured by the foot. The release of water from two reservoirs is exacerbating the situation as a full year's worth of rain falls over the course of a few days. Imagine that. It helps also pouring into the city as rescue efforts continue for the people stranded by the rising water. Texas Governor Greg Abbott sending in more National Guard members to help with the flooding in Houston. He says they're trying to keep people safe in the aftermath of this tropical storm.
We have one primary goal, and that is to save lives. And we will work with the local authorities around the clock to make sure everything is done to protect and save every life.
Now, Houston's mayor says he has no regrets about not ordering the city to evacuate ahead of Tropical Storm Harvey.
The decision that we made was a smart one. It was in the best interest of Houstonians. It was the right decision in terms of their safety.
In fact, he said, Mayor Sylvester Turner said, if people had been evacuated, having them return after the storm would be a nightmare.
Can you imagine the nightmare it would be with millions of people coming back into the city, where many of their communities are underwater, streets are not passable.
It's a mess. There are people, though, heading to the city, thankfully. Relief efforts going in from Red Cross to Salvation Army. We get a report on the Salvation Army team leaving from Oklahoma City, and this report comes from KOCO-TV.
Brett, more than 12 volunteers with the Salvation Army left out at about 5 a.m. this morning from Oklahoma City, headed to Corpus Christi, Texas, one of the hardest hit areas of Texas hit by Hurricane Harvey. Now, those members of the incident management team equipped with a full kitchen, providing food, water, as well as emotional and spiritual support for thousands that are now homeless as a result of this catastrophic storm. Volunteer Cindy Fuller, on her way to Corpus as we speak, remembers her first mission nearly 12 years ago when she started. Hurricane Katrina in 2005. She's told this could be worse.
I am being told that we should expect levels of devastation of Hurricane Katrina or larger. I just want us to be able to serve and to help those affected and to carry out the mission and ministry of the Salvation Army.
Thankful for good folks, the Salvation Army and the Billy Graham Rapid Response Team and Samaritan's Purse and Red Cross and all those good folks that are just lending a hand. More than 50,000 people leaving their homes after authorities ordered evacuations in Fort Bend County, Texas. It's about 35 miles southwest of Houston. The river there expected to crest 14 feet above flood stage, and they're talking another 25 to 30 inches of rain here over the next few days. J.J. Watt, of course, a Houston Texan football player, lending his support to the victims of the Hurricane Harvey. Watt launched a fundraiser to help people who lost their homes and belongings. As of last night, the Houston Flood Relief Fund had raised over $235,000. So good for them. That's some of what's going on. We'll keep you up to date on that. And, of course, they're always talking about gas prices affected because it's an energy-rich area there and a lot of refineries and things. But obviously there's bigger needs than that right now to be focusing on. Well, coming up in a moment, we're going to focus on football and prayer. Apparently the two don't go together, at least according to the Ninth Circuit. There's that thing called separation of church and state that rears its head once again. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College will join us to talk about that. But right now, Jim Garlow has some thoughts about that very subject.
There's no major issue of our world about which God's Word does not provide the most basic and transcendent truth. This is Jim Garlow. Most Christians readily understand the application of biblical truths to personal life, personal emotions, personal ambitions, fears, desires, or to family life. But when it comes to the political, we recoil, most often with the much abused phrase, separation of church and state, as if God has no interest in government. Yet it was God who first thought of government and even described it as being on the shoulder of his incarnated Son. When one mentions the government, particularly pastors, we begin running. This creates great delight to the evil one. But a sovereign king, fully in charge king, doesn't yield any ground to the evil one. And he never intended for us to do that either. This is Jim Garlow, and there's always more of these kind of stories at jimgarlow.com.
So 19 minutes till the top of the hour, and hour one of the early morning late show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold, who's taking a vacation this week, and we wish him a good restful time away. Hopefully he's not heading south to Houston. But our thoughts and prayers with the families in the Houston, Galveston, Corpus Christi area. What a mess. We're heading to Hillsdale College right now, though, to talk to Dr. Adam Carrington. Dr. Carrington's a regular guest here in the Early Morning Late Show, and I'm honored to visit with him. Adam, I always appreciate hearing you on with Bill, and so looking forward to joining in the conversation on my own. Welcome.
Yeah, great to be here. Great to see you, and great that Bill's getting a little bit of a break.
Well, the listeners probably, too. They're probably appreciating that as well. I'm not sure. We're just thinking, Rebecca and I, just talking about floods in Houston and the area, and think, I don't know what's worse. If fire would be more devastating than floods, it just seems like neither would be optimal and one that you wouldn't want to endure. I don't know, have you ever endured either of those?
I have not. Actually, I lived in Texas for a few years further north, but I was there during a drought. And it seems that both can be very devastating. Fires, which were a big problem at that point, although none ever came close to where I lived. I think our thoughts and prayers up here go out to them as well. We have a lot of students here from the Texas area. I've checked in on a couple. Everyone seems safe that I know from the Houston area so far. But a lot of things we fight about in politics really pale in comparison when we see, you know, the devastation and the need for everyone to come together to help people, and especially the church to do so down in Houston at this point.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about getting back to school and more things with you in a moment. But I thought we should. It's that time of year when we think about football, and that's one of the lead stories we want to talk about. It's not really about football, but it's about a football coach in Bremerton, Washington. Give us the update on this story.
Sure. The coach's name is Joseph Kennedy, and for listeners that haven't heard about this, he had a regular habit of praying at the 50-yard line after a game was over, and doing so on his own, by himself, without requiring anyone else to join him. And he was disciplined by his school and eventually released, or his contract not renewed. he sued, arguing that he had First Amendment rights, not just under religion, but under free speech to do so. And the Ninth Circuit just this past week, at the end of last week, said no, that due to the separation of church and state, and also due to saying that public employees aren't allowed to basically speak their minds when they're on the job, which if you are a coach, you know you're always on the job. So, a continuing battle in the question of religion in our public life that, again, has gone against those who want to express that those religious beliefs.
Because what the panel said that when he was praying in front of students and parents, it showed that his speech was directed at least in part to others, not solely to God. So this is, again, the issue where you can worship in private but not in public, right?
Yes, and you know, in, at least in my the church I attend, we divide worship into two. We have private worship, which is with your family, and what's called public worship with others. And it seems that if we really are going to give religion the privileged place that our Constitution gives it, giving it its own specific protection in the free exercise of religion, that seems to really butt up against this idea that that defining part of your life would not be able to be expressed in public. And again, he's not coercing other students, the players to join him. It really was meant to be an expression on his own. And it really does get, again, to the questions of what role does religion have in our public life. And I think it's the Ninth Circuit doesn't seem to align with, say, what our founding fathers or the Constitution seems to lay out.
It does seem that you look around, I mean, seeing sporting events, I mean, it looks like coaches are, praying with their teams all the time. I mean, that's pretty common, it seems.
Yes, and he actually, in this lawsuit, the Coach Kennedy said he did not begin this practice. It was a practice that predated him with other coaches before he took the job, I think, in 2008. And I think it is recognizing that for students who wish to participate, and for coaches as well, that they believe that the vocation that they are employed in, even if it is technically a government job, as a school employee is, that their ultimate duty and vocation is to God, and that God is the creator of the government that employs them, and he is the giver of the vocation that they are exercising. And being able to accommodate that is something that is becoming an increasing battle in courts and in public discourse.
Well, speaking of increasing battles, probably won't surprise us that the president has made some decisions that are bothering people and creating some consternation even within his own party. And when we come back with Adam Carrington, we'll hear a little bit more about what's going on in Arizona as we talk with Professor Adam Carrington. He's a regular guest here in the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stabenow, filling in for Bill Arnold, and there's more to come.
I gotta give myself up off the side of the road.
Nine past the hour. It's a Monday morning on the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stabenow, sitting in for Bill Arnold. And it was last Friday, while our nation's attention was focused on Hurricane Harvey, that the president pardoned former Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And that created a little bit of a storm and reaction. And in fact, some of the president's support in Arizona has been kind of waning anyway. Arizona Senator Jeff Flake hasn't been a fan. We're going to talk about that for the next few minutes with Adam Carrington. He's a professor of political science at Hillsdale College. Adam, good idea, bad idea to do a pardon for Arizona Sheriff Arpaio?
I guess it depends upon the perspective you're taking on it. I think from a purely political perspective of shoring up his base, it's a very popular move because Arpaio has been a staunch advocate of enforcing immigration laws and helping the federal government to do so. On the other hand, what he ended up doing was being in contempt of court when the court ordered him to not call out Latino citizens without any other means of suspicion. So I think from the legal aspect, I think this doesn't quite look as good. And I think the thing that some people aren't taking in mind is that Arpaio has a rather seedy background as far as self-publicizing, going after reporters who said things he didn't like. So I think on the surface, in shoring up his support and showing that he's tough on immigration, this looks good. But Arpaio may not have been the best signal to do so. It might have been better to maybe have pursued an immigration bill, given that I think he comes with so much baggage.
Well, and obviously John McCain and Arizona Senator Jeff Flake, both of those are a little displeased with the president, not only in that, but for several reasons.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, because I think that's a bigger thing where I think President Trump is on at least stronger ground, because in many ways both Flake and McCain represent wings of the Republican Party that Trump ran against, Flake being much more libertarian, wanting a much smaller government, cuts in social services, free trade, more open immigration, McCain being much more of a military hawk. And so what you're seeing is this continued battle for the future direction of the GOP. And I think Trump's argument is, I ran against this and I won, both the primary and the general election. Flake and McCain's argument is that they believe it's doing long-term damage to the GOP. And I think, you know, as a political scientist, I think it's fascinating to watch these intra-party dynamics, who actually is arguing in the best interest short-term and long-term of the party. And I think that these are just more manifestations of that ongoing battle that's been going on since Trump started to run in 2015.
Who knew that the swamp turned out to be within his own party? It seems like there's been a lot of unpleasantness between Trump and you'd think some of his stalwart supporters should be.
Yes, well, you would think that there would be party unity, as we saw in 2000 after President Bush was elected, and when we saw early on in 2008 when Obama was. But I think The Republican Party of 2000 and the Democratic Party of 2008 were much more unified in what they stood for. And I think what Trump has shown is that there was a much deeper divide within Republican voters and with Republican elected officials on what they wanted going forward on issues like immigration, on issues like military intervention, on social services and the role and size of government. And that a lot of the Jeff Flakes, Paul Ryans, John McCain's of the world, while they certainly have their constituency, there's a large part of Republican voters that don't agree with them. And I think the Democratic Party has this problem too, although they haven't quite erupted in the same way. I think what you're seeing is the old lines that divided Republican and Democrat might be changing. And until that new change cements itself, we're going to see a lot of parties fighting with themselves to figure out what their futures are.
Do you see any signs of coming together for, say, tax reform or health care reform or any of those big issues that we'd like to actually see accomplished?
There's at least some discussion, but actually no. And I think that is a failure on both sides. You know, when Republicans, the modern conservative movement, first came together in the 50s and 60s, it was a fusion of different groups: anti-communists, fiscal conservatives, other libertarians who didn't agree on everything but found common ground. And I think the sides so far haven't shown a willingness to find whatever common ground there is. And they're either going to need to find that common ground on health care, on tax reform, things that can make them both happy, or they're going to have to go their separate ways. And going their separate ways, I think, is the more painful alternative. But it's going to take statesmanship, which both sides, I think, haven't been really willing to show to the degree necessary so far.
Just have a minute left. Do we pay any attention to Julian Crine or you know, others who leave the White House that were, you know, working with Trump before? I mean, is that just, you know, opposition providing some news?
I think it matters if it gets to be more. Now, he's a big deal because he was one of the first and early intellectual supporters of Trump. You shouldn't make too much of this. He still believes everything that made him support Trump in the first place. He believes, though, that Trump has shown a level of competence and dedication to the agenda that he thought he was promoting that is inadequate. And that separates two separate questions. One is Trump as a person, as his own leader. And I think he's part of a group that are pushing against that. The other is Trump as an agenda. And I think people would ignore that at their own peril.
Adam, I always enjoy the opportunity to hear from you. Thanks so much for joining us again today, and I wish you all the best here as you head back to school.
Great. Glad to have the students back, and great to talk to you.
Adam Carrington is professor of political science at Hillsdale College, joining us on the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold. We'll be back in a moment. Coming up just 2 weeks from tomorrow, Fall Share begins here on Faith Radio. So looking forward to having you stand with us and partner in ministry. You'll hear great conversations every morning in the Early Morning Late Show. In fact, coming up next hour, we'll talk North Korea, Venezuela, Ukraine, and more. Hurricane Harvey, all those things. David Aikman, one of our guests in the next hour, as well as George Yancey, professor of sociology, University of North Texas. We're going to talk about a variety of things with George. I encourage you to stay tuned for that. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, filling in for Bill Arnold here on the Early Morning Late Show.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.